This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Friday, 21st of May, 2021. On the surface of things, yesterday, certainly in Europe and the US, maybe a bit more mixed session overnight, but in Europe and US, the equity market really storming back higher, some of that perhaps fed by the pretty quick stabilization we saw in the crypto space. We were just talking before the going live here that that perhaps the oil market selling off, commodity prices easing a bit, plus treasuries easing a bit is helping sentiment. That plus the crypto calm, if you will, if you can call it calm yet, helping to drive the pretty sharp action back higher yesterday. So just to take our trusty NASDAQ 100 index, where the technicals are a bit more interesting and dynamic than elsewhere, we can look at the 21-day moving average, which essentially traded just about the highs overnight. We're right there around 13,550-ish, and there's a 61.8 retracement a bit above that, 13,625. You can see that on slide two. I'm arguing that it's not really showing us much, and especially I don't like, and I've pointed this out before, and I've refreshed the chart here on slide three, this pretty obvious correlation between treasury prices and equity prices. And if treasury yields are going down, I would think it speaks to the market being a little bit cautious about the forward outlook here. Not a great reason to expect equities to rush back into the all-out bull mode we were in previously. And I don't know if you have any takeaways from this market action, Peter, here.
Well, as we have talked about, it's an interesting market where the surface is quite calm and you have some volatility and price action in some of the theme basket that we are observing. And I think that just speaks volume to what's really going on. It looks quiet, but it really isn't. And my sense of things is that the investors are very much in a wait and see mode. There's so many things going on in the world that could potentially impact where we go from here on equities. We have all the rising inflation expectations, that we have this temporary pause or standstill in US yields. European yields are moving higher, though. We have the global corporate minimum tax progressing. Now, I think it seems like a consensus getting close to around a 50% tax rate. And then there's the Japanese finance minister said that it's very likely that we could get a digital tax on top of that. And you have the Chinese regulatory story still running. And COVID-19 is not done and over yet across different countries. So it's you're just feeling these uncertainties around the space. And you have the courtesy of all that I've put in here on slide four, the composite container freight rates, different benchmark indices from port to ports, from China to Europe and the US and back. And there's just no alleviation of pain there. It's still a market, and we'll talk about that when I talk about earnings from Richemont, the Swiss-based luxury maker. It's just, you see these bottlenecks everywhere. And as well on slide four, you see our theme basket performance overview. You can see that it's the commodity sector was the only sector down yesterday. And we have seen this behavior now for three trading sessions with commodities being very binary and opposite to everything else. So it just tells you that we are in a very different market environment right now. When you had the crypto puke 2 days ago with spillover effects into gold and NASDAQ. So and you're talking about correlations in the past couple of days, John. We're getting to some correlations between equities and bonds we haven't seen since 2000. You can just sense that something underneath is really going on here across markets.
Yeah, and we talked yesterday about this, the real difficulty in the visibility here. We know all the year-on-year stuff, the basing effects, we know that there's the big opening up, but to what degree does the stimulus effect fade, et cetera. Before I hand it over to you on commodities, because that's where a lot of, I think, is prompting a lot of the test of the narrative here, just wanted to point out there was a tips auction yesterday, 10-year tips, if I'm not mistaken, and the demand there was quite weak. And I just wanted to pull up the break even and show it versus crude oil prices, because obviously underlying energy prices have to be a key component of if inflation levels are rising. And you can see on slide five that it's almost a one-for-one correlation there, the break even versus crude oil. So, I'd argue to get the sustainable inflation, we would need to see crude oil continuing back higher. And I think part of your argument is that that demand is just, it's just going to take a while to get that demand back online. But there's plenty of other stuff going on in commodities and weakness in other sectors as well. So you've got a good overview here on slide six.
Yes, indeed, John. It's been as you all mentioned, another week of weakness coming into the market, and once again, it's almost synchronized again. All major sectors experiencing some headwinds. Take oil first. The main news this week has really been the Iran nuclear negotiations, which is getting close to a deal, and that deal could lead to renewed or increase in production and exports from Iran over the coming months. That has spooked the market somewhat. Also adding into that, what we've been warning about for a while, that yes, we are focusing on a strong pickup in the demand in the US and also in Europe, but as long as we don't get Asia on board as well, where as long as we don't see this synchronized growth in global demand for fuel, then crude oil is likely to remain stuck here in the 60s. And the Iran news basically was the catalyst this week for some additional weakness. But I think on top of that, we also had some news out of China. They're increasingly worried about inflation, the output cost, and they have been verbally intervening in the market this week, talking about implementing additional measures to curb the continued rise in raw material prices. So that's one to keep an eye on out for as well. And then we had the opposite direction in gold early in the week with all the crypto volatility coming into the market. And that was actually an interesting headline in one of the magazines this morning, or one of the news outlets. You can see that here on slide seven, that big investors are switching out of Bitcoin and into traditional gold as inflation fears heat up. That's JP Morgan basically coming with that observation. That's obviously interesting, and then it does highlight some of the concerns we had for Bitcoin, not from an investment perspective. I mean, it's a volatile market, and it's appealing to many types of traders and investors. But from a store value perspective, it really doesn't make much sense when volatility is as great as it is right now. So that's an interesting one to follow. We're seeing flows into ETFs, gold ETFs, being on the rise now for the past 4 weeks. So that's indicating a market that's starting to get some traction again. But keep an eye on the weekly close here around that 1876 level. It's a 50% retracement of the sell-off from last August. If we can close above there, then 1922 is the target next week. But just looking at that uptrend we've been in, it looks like a market increasingly in need of a consolidation and potentially a retracement back down to somewhere below 1850. So I think I'll just be a little bit hesitant getting too bullish gold just here in the short term before we've seen a small correction.
All right, and then just to round out the comments on the crypto space, there was the news item, which is a negative, all of the things being equal, that the U.S. Treasury wants to will require that any crypto transaction of $10,000 or more will have to be reported to the IRS transaction. I mean, I assume that's only for purchases, that perhaps if your speculation is going on within the crypto space, that's of course not the case. But then if you, I guess, transfer that money out, or certainly if you make any payment in cryptocurrencies, that would have to be declared. That's a lot of overhead if payments pick up, and it's just one of these signs of the regulatory risk. On the technical front, very clear after yesterday's action, there was a prior low around 42K, and that was the previous high in Bitcoin, for example, before the run up to almost 65,000. The previous major high was 42,000. It tried to find support there, it broke down, and now this 40,000 to 42,000 area is the key resistance. If that's broken, the 47 plus K area up to 50,000 would be the next focus, and for Ethereum seems to be 3,000. Okay, let's get to, we talked a lot about real yields, and I think there's an interesting real yield theme to sort of pull out of FX here, and one that I found a little bit of a head scratcher here, that we haven't seen more downside in the likes of an Aussie on this recent commodity weakness. You also have China actively trying to discourage purchases of, coking coal was the first one, but also even now iron ore, asking companies to look for ways to find alternative sources. I mean, this is the main export, or the chief export out of Australia. That, and we've seen a price correction on the declaration of moves against or curbs against commodity price rises. And yet Aussie is, you know, it's weak again across the board, but it's kind of hanging in there relative to this flow of information. And I think some of that is just the rebound to risk sentiment, but I still think it looks vulnerable here. And then just a reminder, overnight, we have the Japanese CPI report out showing we are still at slightly negative prices in Japan, despite a very weak currency. And, you know, despite what we've seen in the inflation pickups elsewhere, it's just a reminder that the real yields in Japan are still quite quite strong relative to elsewhere. And the yen only starts to look bad if you get proper, fundamentally, if you get proper real yield drops elsewhere that outpace what's going on in Japan. So Japanese yen is still retaining on a fundamental sense some real value here. We're seeing it pick up a little bit here and there, and I think Aussie yen just technically is quite interesting, and I put that chart on slide 8. Does the market pick up on the risk, you know, to the Australia from this, to its exports into China, as well as just the price corrections, and pick up on this real yield theme in the likes of Japanese yen, as long as yields are sort of range bound or lower nominally? So let's look at that one for a potential correction. 84 area, if that goes, I think it looks quite interesting for further downside. And then on the general trend readings, you're seeing that the dollar is tilting back a little bit lower, but the readings are quite soft across the board. And the yen is you know, it's losing its, certainly losing its downside impetus, if nothing else here. Okay, let's get back to the equity market. Peter, you are looking at IPOs, and what else are you looking at this as we close out the week here?
Yeah, so the IPO market has been not quite, but we have sort of lacked some of the big blockbusters. And we, as we have written in our quick take the last couple of days, Robinhood is planning to reveal its S1 filing prospectus on next week, and then basically start trading within the next couple of weeks. But we also had an interesting IPO yesterday from a Swedish company that have chosen to list on the NASDAQ in the US called Oatly. It's a company that creates milk products and other type of products from oats, hence the name. It's very much oriented towards the vegan segment and the whole, it's part of that, you know, it's part of the green transformation theme. That there are some tentacles to this area as well, because, you know, the green transformation is all about, is generally about what is the CO2 or the carbon emission footprint on the world, and the agricultural sector and meat production sits inside, you know, in that discussion. And you have a pretty fast growing segment there that is, you know, increasingly tuning down its meat consumption. So Oatly fits into that theme. I would love to do a theme on a theme basket on this, but unfortunately we only have a couple of names. So now Oatly, and we have Beyond Meat, but it's not a big enough industry yet to do an equity theme. And then, but even more importantly, which will be our next equity theme baskets next week, is the global logistics industry. So we have JD Logistics, which is a spin-off of JD.com, you know, the e-commerce giant of China. It's just raised close to a little bit more than $3 billion in its IPO. It's an indication. It could be even higher, but they are at least getting very close to their first day of trading in Hong Kong. So we will be tracking that industry. And then talking more about earnings, slide 10, we had very strong results yesterday, I think, from Tencent. I know some have reported that they missed a little bit. I think given the backdrop and all the Chinese regulation noise that is fueling across the market, I think it was very strong. I mean, their revenue is up 27%. Their forecasts are still strong. I mean, talking about a company that is growing at 20% on the top line for the next couple of years, I think the free cash flow estimates are still very conservative. I think this is a company that generates between 30 and 32% free cash flow off their revenue. And if you take the 2022 estimates for sales and you apply the cash flow generation, you're actually having a very high growth company here priced very close to a forward 5% free cash flow yield. And as we talked about in the internal call, John, I think a lot of investors, as soon as the noise about China sort of you know, goes away on this whole regulation, then people realize that, yes, there is more regulatory scrutiny, but they're actually able to become or still be dominant and generate a lot of cash. I think emerging markets will come back. I think China will come back, and a lot of big leading investors in the world are looking at China. And then just also quickly just mentioning in today's session, Pinduoduo, again, another big Chinese e-commerce company is expected to report. I expect strong numbers. Deere on the agriculture sector, very important because the agriculture sits within the commodity space, and it's I think it's very important to get a read on what Deere is seeing in terms of pricing power. And then we have had already Richard Mann, the Swiss-based luxury maker, and that's coming back to the story I talked about it with Bottlenecks. The CEO said that they're already running at capacity and demand levels way beyond what they saw in 2019 before the pandemic. So it just suggests that, you know, there are a lot of parts and pockets of the economy that is really running hot, and luxury is definitely one of them.
Luxury running hot on a pandemic, post-pandemic. That's the world we live in.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go to the calendar to round out the week. There are a couple of things, of course, we'll be looking at, especially the Eurozone. Preliminary May PMIs. Again, we're still in the opening up process, probably through next month. So the services bounce back, probably happening starting next month more. And then especially over the summer, July and August portions with the tourist season, hopefully more or less going more full bore this year for those, especially Southern European economies. ECB President Lagarde is out speaking following the Eurogroup meeting. That's an interesting one. And then, the preliminary market surveys, the market doesn't pick up on these for whatever reason, even though they're often, of course, quite tightly correlated with what goes on in the official ISM surveys in the U.S., and the next week, just want to pull out a couple things here. We have Brainerd out speaking. I think when she booked this gig, wasn't seeing that the timing would be as interesting as it turns out it is, because, of course, we had this crypto volatility this week, but she's speaking at a cryptocurrency conference on Monday. Hungarian Central Bank is interesting because of the guidance, as they've guided for being perhaps the first European Central Bank to hike rates. And then rounding out next week, really key, and it's going to be interesting, is the PCE inflation, where I forgot to jot down the headline, but I've jotted down 2.9% expected at the core. That would be the highest reading since 1992 if we print a core reading that high for the PCE. This is the Fed's supposed go-to measure for inflation, so I think that's an interesting one. And then exciting news, we are out of the office on Monday, as is another one of these public holidays here in Denmark on Monday, but I will be recording a special edition podcast with an external guest that I'm really excited about. I won't tease who it is. I'll get the recording in the bag and promote it later today and over the weekend, just so you know what's up, and that will be out and ready for you on Monday morning. So stay tuned for that. It'll be cool. It'd be cool to have an external voice if you're getting tired of listening to the Three Stooges here on the morning podcast. And then we'll be back, of course, on Tuesday with the regular dailies. For now, it's a wrap. We'll have a great weekend, and we'll be back, of course, next week with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call, or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.